Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of our amazing new show, She Knows, the story about amazing women doing amazing things. And today, there's no exception here. We've also got an amazing person who's in my local area too, down in G-Town in Geelong. She's a resilience consultant. She's a speaker. She's an author and an artist. She's also a mum and a grandma at a really young age, by the way, because I can't believe it. She just told me she's a grandmother. I was like, really? But I want to introduce you all to our amazing next guest, Justine Martin. How are you?
I'm awesome. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Now, tell me, your life must be pretty busy right about now.
Oh, my life is always busy. I don't know right about now, but every day is busy.
So you've got grandkids, yeah?
I have three step-grandchildren that are 11, 9 and 7, and I have three biological grandsons that are 2.5, 1 and 3 months.
Wow. And do they come over to your house a bit?
Yeah, they do. They have their own room here, actually. I've got two sets of bunk beds in it, and they've got a PlayStation, and they love coming to Nana's, so it's great.
There you go. And you've managed to keep the house so clean and looking amazing in the background. My hat's off to you.
Thanks.
Yeah, tell me, right, we're in crazy times. It's obviously, you know, COVID for a lot of people are still locked down. And one question I love to ask my guests at the start, and you can maybe give me an example of maybe pre or what you're hoping for your day to be post, as well as what it's been whilst you've been kind of locked down. But tell me, what does a typical day in the life of Justine Martin look like?
Oh, my God, where do I start? The first thing I do every morning without fail is when I get out of bed, I make my bed. So at least I've accomplished something for the day. I think that's really important. Then everything else is a bonus for me. Depending on what day of the week it is, prior to, you know, lockdowns and COVID, there was a lot of face-to-face. I teach art wellness classes to other disabled people. So it's like setting the studio up for that, answering emails, phone calls, teaching at the same time and writing a book at the same time, and like lots of like little multitasks there. So my day is full from the time that I wake up to the time that I go to bed every single day. During lockdown, I've worked pretty much 7 days a week because what else is there to do? I'm not one that, you know, spends lots of time watching mindless TV. I like to be productive. You know, I realize that time is very short, and to try and fit as much into it as I possibly could each and every day.
Now, what I find interesting there is you're a creative, you know, you're an artist, and a lot of people would know that getting into a creative mode and a creative space can take time, but then you've also got to allow for it so that you can really get something out of the session. Now, you've mentioned so much stuff happening in your day from a more of a business and operational perspective. How do you find time to balance up that side and your creative side?
Well, my creative side started as a hobby 10 years ago when I was told that I'd never be able to work again with having the MS. And I did stop work for a long period of time there. And my neurologist said, oh, you know, find a hobby. And I went, oh, I've always wanted to learn how to paint. And so that became my form of meditation, was painting. And then all of a sudden, you know, people were buying my paintings, and it just, you know, it snowballed from there. So I still use, you know, the creative outlet of it as meditation. That's my downtime. I just happen to be making some money on the commission pieces that now come in. So it's been quite easy just to swap between the two. You know, I could be in teaching, you know, a class of four, and they're all happily doing their stuff, and I'll have a painting that's sitting there that needs a little bit of work on it. So rather than sitting down for like 4, 5, 6 hours at a time, what I used to do, I now, you know, might put 10 minutes into something or 20 minutes into something, and that's still, you know, adding time into it. And all of a sudden, you know, it takes me a lot longer to finish a piece, but that piece is completed. So yeah, it is my downtime, I suppose you could say, is the creative side.
So evolving as an artist over time, I would assume that there's a level of discipline that starts to come with being able to be really productive creatively. Is there maybe one thing you could share or pass on to someone else who's a creative who might have had those moments where they get a bit stuck or they feel like they don't have time because they know how much time they need to spend to give it its fairness to work. Like, you know, what are those discipline things you can implement to have a bit of structure around being really effective when you try to be creative?
Just to work on it, even if it's only 5 or 10 minutes a day. And the days that you really think that you're not creative and that, go and do it anyway, because you'll soon get into the zone of it. And not everything that you create has to be of exhibition quality. So if you're having like a shitty day and you don't think that it'll be up to your best performance in it, just do it anyway. Because some of the best things I've created have come out of some of the most shittiest times in my life.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's almost a bit of a muscle you've got to continue to work out. And yeah, awesome. Okay, this is great. So what I took from all of that is you win the day every day by simply making the bed.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I've just got to go and make mine quickly now. I'll be back. All right, let's... Now we've heard what a typical day looks like. You've put us all to shame. I feel like I need to be doing more in mine. But let's rewind a bit, maybe to perhaps some of your more earlier memories. And I'd love to hear from you. Who were some of those female and women role models for you growing up? And they may be people that were really close to you from a family perspective, or perhaps even people you admired from afar.
So the first one would be my mum. So my mum had a lot of illness in her life. At the age of 27, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, MS at 33, cervical cancer at 40, and lung cancer at 49, and passed away the age of 49 from complications from the MS. Wow. But she single-handedly raised my brother and I without maintenance back then, going back to work. And what she overcame was, you know, truly amazing. And her worth ethic is definitely where I get my worth ethic from. So, she made a big impact in my life. And the other one would have to be my auntie, so my mum's sister. So she's like the patriarch of the family, and she's always someone that I can, you know, ring and you know, pour my heart and soul out to, and who's always there. So, you know, they're two, and she runs her own business as well. So they're two, you know, powerful women that, you know, I inspired to be like when I grew up.
That's beautiful. Tell me, who was maybe one from afar? Was there a sporting icon or a Hollywood?
It'd have to be someone that has actually passed away, and that would be Frida Kahlo.
Tell me more.
You know, what she went through as a woman, as an artist, and as a disabled person is truly inspiring. So, yeah, last 10 years, definitely her.
Awesome. Now, tell me, right, has there been a really bad piece of advice you've been given recently, or maybe you've seen someone else being given it and you've been brave enough to jump in and say, hey, I'm not too sure if that's actually the best advice for you right now?
Oh, yes. So I've been told a couple of times that there's no way I could possibly do everything that I do and that I stretch myself way too thin. And I'm like, excuse me, that's your limiting belief on what you can do. That's not me. You don't know me. You don't know what I'm capable of. I pull people up all the time and they're like, wow, you can't possibly do all of that. No, that's your limiting belief, not mine.
Well, I'm on notice. I better choose my questions carefully. Now, I have to ask you, because you shared an amazingly funny story with me before we started recording. The next question I usually go to is, you know, about those gender-specific challenges maybe you face, and some great examples. But maybe you can broaden that for me and share an example of something more so with regards to perhaps your disability.
Yep. So I do have a disabled car park permit, and I've had that baby now for about 10 years. And so for the last 10 years, I have copped so much abuse by parking in disabled car parks, because the majority of the time I don't use a mobility aid, but that doesn't mean that I don't struggle some days. And I like to shop, and you know, I can get into the shops okay, but the energy required to, you know, get back to the car and the car park, if it's parked way on the other side of the car park, is beyond me some days. So, yeah, I've been abused. I've had to go to the police. My daughter and I were stalked by this not very nice woman one day, hurling abuse out the window, and we were actually in danger for our lives. So my daughter still remembers it, and she was about 12, I think, at the time, 14, somewhere around that. It wasn't a nice experience. So, you know, just because people don't look disabled doesn't mean that they're not disabled. So, you know, we have a valid reason for having that car park permit.
On that point, how could we implement some changes that would actually contribute to making it, I don't want to say make it easier for, you know, someone to identify a disabled person, because that's not really what it's about, but how could we take the tone down? How could we really take the animosity and the sting and the lack of understanding out of those situations?
Because there has been a lot of discussion about, obviously, about this, you know, the universal sign for disability is a person in a wheelchair, and that's the first starting point that needs to change, because people presume that when you're parking in there that you have a mobility aid, and that's not the case. So that would be the first thing, is finding a new universal sign for disability. And they are working on it. It's just taking some time to, you know, roll it out to everyone. If someone is parking in that car park and they've got a sticker in their window, you don't say anything. You don't say anything. You know, it's not your business.
Correct.
They're parking there. If they haven't got a parking permit in there, and that parking spot is not, oh, I've only got 5 minutes to run into the shops and get it. No, I'm sorry, you don't park in there. You must display that permit. And that's why they have expiry dates on them. So if the person that has it dies, their family can't take it and use it. I didn't know it had an expiry date. I actually got a fine for parking in a disabled car park, and my permit was out by 2 days in expiry. And it didn't occur to me that it had an expiry on it, because I haven't got a cure for what's wrong with me. And so anyway, I had to write to Geelong Council, and that they waived the fine. And every couple of years I have to go and get it renewed. So if they haven't got a permit, by all means, say something to them. And, you know, if you're parking in that car park and you don't have a permit, well, shame on you, because, you know, there are general people, you know, people out there that have the disabilities that actually need it.
Yeah, totally. So you're an author, you're an artist, you're a speaker, you know, you influence, you lead, you're in front of people, you're communicating to people on a regular basis, you're performing, you know, in front of live audiences. And I'm not sure how long you've been doing this for, how long you felt like you're really confident and in the zone, but if you did rewind back to when you first embarked on the journey, yep, what are some pieces of advice maybe you'd give to another young woman starting out on that journey to maybe expedite getting to the level that you're at?
I'd recommend doing some training. I mean, there's plenty of facilities out there now that actually, for like public speaking, go and doing a public speaking course. I didn't have that opportunity when I first started. I was kind of thrown in the deep end, and ended up talking in front of 500 people a week at one stage. So in a previous life, as I call it, before I became disabled. And, you know, no one knows your passion more than what you do. So, you know, listen to what your core beliefs are and what you want to achieve in your life, and have those goals and those directions, and then just go for it. You know, there'll always be negative Nancys around you. You've just got to listen to your own gut and go with what your dreams are.
That's great. You've already given me 2 to 3 secrets to success. I wonder if there's one more you could share with me that maybe has been something you've done either on a daily or a semi-regular basis that surprised you in being a real cornerstone to helping you have an edge and really get into that high performance mode.
Planning. I have a trusted system that I use. I can't keep everything in my head. No one can keep everything in their head. So I have a planner that I carry absolutely everywhere with me. It's a written planner. It's a book. And it's always within arm's reach. And I take it absolutely everywhere. I had to go and buy a new handbag so it would fit in it.
What happens when you lose it and you have to retrace your steps?
No. It has become a habit that it goes absolutely everywhere with me. And, you know, the front section is where all my calendar is, and then every aspect of my business is in the back section. So it's all there, you know, in arm's reach all the time. And I would not be as successful as what I am or be able to operate, you know, as much as I do unless it was all in that one contained spot. And, you know, you can do it on your phone, but if your phone's flat, you lose your phone, then you're stuffed. So paper-based, go back to paper-based. Look what happened, you know, only this week with Facebook dropping out and everyone, you know, Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram all went. So you've got to have some form of paperback with you. I've lost a whole calendar. When my computer updated, it all got wiped and I learned from that. So
and it just survived without Facebook for 8 hours. Were you okay?
I didn't even realize. I was too busy on podcasts and you know, teaching and everything like that to realize that, you know, Facebook wasn't working. Someone actually sent me a message and said, oh, you know, Facebook and Instagram are out. And I'm like, oh, all right, I'll deal with that a little bit later. And then by the time I got around to it, it was all back on working again. But it is scary to think that, you know, Mark can flick a switch and turn it all off like that. So, you know, we do need to be aware of that as well with, you know, contingency plans in place. That do you have a really good mail list? You know, what's your CRM doing that, you know, if we can't, you know, put it out through Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp, you know, what's your backup system and how many contacts have you got on that backup system? So
totally. So I reckon you just may be potentially the first guest that doesn't have an answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What are your biggest fears?
I don't have any.
How do I know you'd say that? And maybe if you don't, and I understand why, but for our listener and our viewers, explain to me why potentially they don't exist and some of that adversity you've had to face at such a young age.
So as I said about, you know, my mum's illnesses, in 2011 I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and had to stop work due to my disabilities at that particular time. And I was told that there wasn't enough time and not enough money by an disability employment agency to actually retrain me to do anything. And so, you know, I had no purpose or anything then. And, you know, what do you do for the rest of your life? Then in 2013, 14 and 15, I had heart surgeries and then ended up with pericarditis from the third one. Then in 2016, I was diagnosed with Lividio reticularis. So I was going purple and I looked like a zombie. My kids thought it was great that mum was from the living dead. And then I was diagnosed with melanoma on my leg and they stumbled across that when they were looking for lymphoma. And then I was diagnosed with mixed cryoglobulinemia. So I had too much protein in my blood and that was choking me off internally and I was actually dying. I couldn't move my hands and my fingers properly and life was looking really scary. And then I was diagnosed a month later with chronic lymphocytic leukemia and small lymphocytic lymphoma. And so I had three primary cancers effectively at once and this other condition and another skin condition. So, you know, I hit rock bottom and, you know, I fought for my life. I fought to be here and still had a lot of living to do and what I wanted to achieve. And I've come through all of that with flying colours. I'm in remission from all of the cancers. Awesome. And in 2018, I was diagnosed with another condition called lipedema and that affects 11% of all women and it's called the painful fat syndrome. So, you know, again, another adversity. And so from all of these adversities and, you know, gaining so much resilience. Everyone kept saying to me, you know, how do you do what you do? You know, how have you survived everything? You know, your determination is huge, and, you know, you need to be telling your story out there. And that's how it's, you know, all evolved. And the resilience mindset consulting and courses coming out, and I've got a pack dropping this week on resilience mindset. So that's why I am the person that I am today, because of all the adversity that I have, you know, gone through, and the determination that, you know, my life isn't over yet. And time, like, time to me is the most precious commodity on the planet. You cannot buy it, reuse it, or sell it. So you need to, you know, each and every day, you know, that old cliche, you know, about time. Well, it's true. You know, you really need to be putting your best foot forward. So, you know, I won recently an award against the odds. I've just won a Coach of the Year award. So it's amazing on not giving up where it can take you.
Yeah, I love that. What was the other one? Was that the Mumpreneur Awards?
Yes. So the Oz Mumpreneur Awards, I won 5. So I won Coach of the Year, Creative Entrepreneur, Disabled Business Excellence, Pivot, Business Pivot, and Overcoming the Odds. And then next week I've got the Roar Awards, where I was nominated for 4 of those, and I've made the finals of 2 of Social Change Hero and Creative Artist of the Year as well. And then in December, I've been nominated for another one in WA, which is the Positivity Award. So people keep nominating me for all these awards. Love it. It's fantastic. And, you know, I've been told that, you know, my story is someone else's survival guide, and that gives me some purpose, you know, as well, in trying to help as many people as I possibly can. So hence doing the podcast today.
Woo! We're going to light it up. We're going to melt down the internet for at least 8 hours. It's going to crash. Now, I have to ask, whilst people are listening and watching, they're going to Google you if they haven't already. What's the URL?
So I've got a couple of different ones. So there's justinemartin.com.au, and there's JuzzArt, so JuzzArt.com.au.
Love it. Now tell me, you've got to give me at least one of these secret talents that maybe you and only a couple of people close to you know that you have. Like, we know you're an artist. We know you're a speaker. But, like, you know, do you just dominate karaoke, or, you know, like, where are you just killing it that we don't even know?
Well, I can't mention that in public, can I? So I better think of something else and what I was thinking of.
Oh, no. No, I really want to know what you were going to say.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Are you, like, really good at lawn bowls, or, you know?
So I'm an Olympic weightlifter. So,
what's,
yeah.
What's the record? What's your PB?
What have I done? Oh, look, I've got a few world records under my belt, but, you know, that was about 20 years ago that all these happened. I've represented Australia quite a few times in all-round weightlifting and Olympic weightlifting. But most people would say, my secret talent, hidden talent, and that is probably determination. When I set my mind to something, no matter what the odds are, I will achieve it.
Yeah.
Whether it's weightlifting, whether it's surviving cancer, you know, putting the MS at bay, whatever it is, whatever I put my mind to, you know, creating my empire, don't tell me can't. Never tell me can't. You know, I had a doctor tell me that I could not ever work again. Well, I proved him wrong. So, again, you know, that's their limiting beliefs. It's not mine.
Yeah, awesome. So when you're weightlifting, right, like, how do you undergo training and kind of like building strength whilst battling all of those illnesses? Like,
yeah, I mean, so I still weight train 3 days a week. I have a PT that I work with, and every day I walk in there, Vernon says to me, "How are you today?" And I can't mention those words on air either. So my body determines on what I'm able to do each and every time I walk in there. I took up Olympic weightlifting after I was diagnosed with MS and became the Australian Masters champion for my age and body weight. So again, working around, you know, my disability and what the body does. Yeah, so weightlifting, I love lifting heavy things. I represented Australia in tug of war 20 years ago. That was fantastic. Like, I'm a girly, but to get on the rope and get tacky all over your hands and, you know, the fake knuckles, you know, used to suffer a bit, but drag through the mud, it was so much fun. So, you know, whatever you're doing, you got to make it fun. I love going in and picking up heavy things still. And you know, I'm nowhere near as strong as what I used to be. You know, I did a two-person lift with a girlfriend one day and we pulled 230 kilos off the ground. And, you know, I'll remember that. I've done truck pulls. I've pulled a semi-trailer with my previous partner. Him and I pulled a semi one day, and that was good fun. I mean, we only moved it, you know, about 3 or 4 meters, but it was still, we moved it. So, you know, the mind is an amazing tool. And when you set your mind to something and really set your mind to that goal, you can achieve it. You can achieve anything.
But I totally
agree. Don't listen to other people's, you know, limiting beliefs.
Yeah. So what's been, when you've delivered a talk most recently, what's been one thing that's happened or, you know, has occurred in one of those sessions that you weren't expecting to, which has really blown you away? Because I'm sure after having spoken as much as you have, you know, there'd be an element of you've kind of seen and heard it all. But has there been one particular person or a question or something that happened that just really, blew you away?
I get emails and inboxes on how my journey and my determination has inspired and motivated them to actually change major things in their lives. So that to me is, you know, the ultimate thing that, and that's what I'm doing, you know. Again, like, you know, my story is someone else's survival guide. And, you know, if they're not sitting at home anymore looking at four walls and, you know, thinking that the world is very bleak out there, and, you know, they see what I'm doing and what I'm achieving, and know that, you know, they can do stuff as well. So to get those emails are really, really special. You know, give a talk and then, you know, a couple of weeks later or a month later, you know, these emails come in. Yeah, it's, you know, that's great. That's the icing on the cake.
So, I mean, you've ticked off the bucket list quite a bit. Now, I guess with travel as an example, it's a bit difficult for some people to tick off some of those items.
Mm.
But has there been something new recently that you've added to the list that you've really locked in and you want to do?
Not added to the list. I I've always got a major list of things that I want to do. I am considering starting a publishing house next year. I've written a children's book and I've had a contract come back, and I've still got 27 submissions out there. So maybe that. So
hang on. Let's just delve into that. So you've been given a contract to do a children's book, and through that process, have you gone, hey, maybe I could be the publishing house? Yeah, like, is something made you think, wow.
So it's quite funny. So I've written and illustrated the children's book. It's called Same, Same, But Different. And it's all about equality. And then, I just went to the loo one day. I was talking to Susie, who's my PR girl, and I just go to the loo. And so I'd submitted to like 30 publishing houses, and I've come back and I went, you know, right, if I haven't got you know, a contract that I'm happy with by the 1st of January, I'm going to start a publishing house. She goes, you're only gone for a minute. I said, well, that's all it takes for a good idea. That's all it takes.
So I agree with that.
I have had a contract come through, and I am in, you know, negotiations with a UK publisher. So we'll see what happens with that, if it's the right fit for me. If not, yeah, well, you know, I'm still giving it to the 1st of January. And then, you know, there's the resilience mindset side of my business, and there's books and courses and everything coming out from that as well. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I want to walk over the Sydney Harbour Bridge, and I definitely want to travel back up to Townsville where my son is, my grandson is, and just explore the world as it opens up again. So,
yeah, I find it fascinating what you mentioned then about through the immersive process of learning and getting a contract to publish a book, that you've gone, you know what, I may not want to settle for this, and I may be brave enough to go and understand how I could be the publisher. That's very powerful, because it sounds like through knowledge and education, you've been able to say to yourself, well, there's no reason why I couldn't flip the switch and be that. And I think that's relevant to this show and to women listening, and who may be in a similar position. But where does that confidence for you come from, and how can another woman looking to awaken it kind of know how to trust that instinct? Because it sounds like you've gotten very good at this, right? No challenge is too big for you, and you've got this reference structure where you can draw upon lived experiences, and you've faced adversity much, you know, higher than, to be fair, a lot of people. So they're probably at number two on the dial out of 10. You're probably at like 11. How can they take a baby step to, you know, building that confidence to get to that level where you're like, I'm going to dominate this space?
Well, they could take the step by engaging me for a start in my resilience consulting. And that would be a really good step forward. And look, just take baby steps. You know, it doesn't all happen straight away. There are strategic things that you can put in place. And, you know, the first thing, just get a planner. Get a planner. So your life is all there. You can see it in front of you, and you can then grow from that. So, but if you've got bits here, there, and everywhere, then it is really hard to bring it all together without seeing it in front of you. So, but yeah, engage in my employment and just take baby steps towards it. You know, you are the sum of the five people that you hang around. So there's a really good place that you can start. So if you're hanging around with negative people all the time, it's time to change tribe. So, you know, make them acquaintances and then find some inner circle people that will take you to the next level.
I love that. Well, I've got one more question before we go. And I just want to say to everyone, once again, I couldn't agree more. I've learned so much today, but do check justinemartin.com.au. Am I saying that right?
Yes,
right, spelling, yeah. Definitely do it. Now, I have to ask you, is there one particular thing that you're reading, listening to, or absorbing, or a particular personal voice right now that we can share with our viewers and listeners?
I listen to Mel Robbins a lot. And her 5-second rule is fantastic, and I quite often go over that again. I watch just lots of TED Talks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're easy, they're on hand, they're always, you know, pretty much positive. You can get them for 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. They don't take long to actually watch. So look at, you know, something positive to fill your day each and every day. I don't watch the news anymore. I haven't watched the news in nearly 2 years. If there's something important, someone else is going to tell me about it, and then I'll look for it. I control the environment that is coming in. I control the fuel that comes into my mind as well as my body. So I, yeah, fuel my mind with positivity each and every day, and then it makes it easier to be positive each and every day.
Love it. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. How can we not just check you out, but how can we get in touch, collaborate? What platform, where do we go? Aside from your website, is it LinkedIn? Is it Facebook? Is it Twitter, Instagram?
I'm over all socials. So LinkedIn, there's Justine Martin and Justine Martin Corporation on LinkedIn. On socials, on Facebook, there's Resilience Mindset with Justine Martin. Or just put in Resilience Mindset, Justine, and it'll come up. Or you can put in Juzdart, J-U-Z-T-A-R-T, and that'll come up on socials as well. So, or just type in Justine Martin Geelong, and it'll come up everywhere. So
love it.
We're all over it.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Can't wait to do it all again. Thanks to Susie for setting it up, and looking forward to being able to catch up in person.